Accession number 14982, Miss J. Brown, Reel 9.
Mr. Brown, Reel 9. You weren't in Cassassin long, Mr. Brown.
No,
when did you go after that?
We had a short stay in Cassassin, probably less than 2 weeks. And then, movement again. They decided to send the division to Cyprus because Crete had fallen to the German airborne, and they thought that was in the possibly the next jumping off point. But obviously the Germans had had so many casualties in taking Crete that the airborne army is near enough finished. Because I don't think it was ever used an airborne army again. Individual battalion drops and support and infantry and such as that. But anyway, up to Cyprus we were going. We got on the train, loaded on the train, went down to Port Said. We got down there, everything was double time. The Navy was in such a rush. There were things we didn't know about, that to operate dark in the hours of darkness, etc., etc. So they split the battalion up. There was half on a destroyer, and the half I was on were on the Latona, which was a mine layer. And we were told at the time they were the fastest ships in the British Navy. But there'd been three of that class, and we're also told two had already been lost in the med. You see? So off we went. It was turning down. We travelled at night time. It was pretty uneventful. But with half a battalion hanging on, the mine layer is not that very big. But down below, there was a ramp down below where the mines run down, and obviously there was no mines on board. And the naval men were operating the Chicago pianos on the top, the pom-poms. They didn't have to use them. And anyway, being Durham Light Infantry, there was a young chap I knew named Stewart. He was actually 3 years younger than me, but he was on the crew. He's looking around for daylight cover and he found me. Down below decks. He had a tiny little cabin. He said this is where three was. He said a little nook in the corner, you know. And anyway, he managed to get an enamel jug with tea, hot sweet tea, and I sat with him for a few hours. But anyway, we had no idea how far Cyprus was going to be. We knew it wasn't the other end of the world. But something happened during the night, and the story we got told was this, that there was such a bang, and its feet had stopped dead. I thought we'd been tin-fished. Getting ready, let's get a raft, let's get over the side, you know. But the story was, that lifted the boom, would hit the boom. If that's correct or not, I don't know. But we did come to a sudden stop. But anyway, that was righted within no time at all. Into Famagusta Harbour, it was dark, and that's when it really started. Down that gangplank, all your gear. Get as much as you could. And it was great to watch the Navy blokes. They had to be out before daylight. They were throwing everything over the side. It doesn't matter what it was. If it belonged to us, over the side it went. Aye. But anyway, the 9th Battalion rode before us. To cut a long story short, if I remember correctly, there'd been in such a rush to embark at Port Said, quite a bit of the gear had been left there. So we obligingly took their gear. Not me personally, but the gear was loaded. I think it went on the destroyer, actually. And we were on the Latona. But the Navy blokes throwing the stuff over the side, there was quite a few items, especially anti-tank rifles. They blamed the Navy for it because nobody wanted anti-tank rifles. They went into the water, see? Because this had obviously been done before. There was a big fat Cypriot there, he could swim like a salmon. It was his job to get them out. He was being paid, obviously, like. But I'll not tell you the neighbours were calling them when he was bringing the anti-tank rifles up. So, sorted out, no time at all, off we marched, and just through the harbour, not far from the harbour, is a little small gauge railway, like something you see at the seaside, you know. Big long train, wooden carriages, no windows, no doors, just planks for seats, that was great, like, piled on there, and the engine wasn't over, it was wood-fired. Well, after a while, they got a start, you know, chug, 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 and then the wheels refused to turn. Eventually got away, you know. But the thing was, we went right through the central plane. Well, putting it bluntly, you could get off with a shit and still catch the train. You know what I mean? Well, that was great. Like, there's nobody minded that. But I remember, this was Cyprus. I mean, mountains right round the outside, near enough. The central plane, very hot, like. But certainly plenty of palm trees, olive groves, this and that and the other. There wasn't much else, like, you know, expecting big farms and all that, like you'd get in this country. It wasn't like that, like. Little tiny little Cypriot villages and, you know, and all that.
Did you like what you'd seen? Did you like Cyprus?
Why, it was a strange land to us, you say. We didn't say why we like it, we don't like it. It's just, this is it, like. Well, for those, of course, obviously there's more to Cyprus than that, you know. Eventually we got the train pulled into what they described as a station in Nicosia, the capital. And we piled off there. I don't know if just on vacations or where. We piled off there. We marched outside the town. There was a tented camp already put up there, like. Don't know how to put it up. There was a battalion of regular soldiers, the Sherwood Foresters, had been there quite a while, you know. And they were doing military police jobs, etc., etc. But only these tents were up. And I think we only stopped there, what, 2 or 3 days. But there's no way to get any sleep at night. Crickets. There must have been billions of them. Chirp, 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 all night. Everybody was playing earlier. You couldn't sleep, you know. It was like being to disco. And they were making the plans there. And unless they already had them, they had, like, the three rifle companies and headquarter company were marched up to the iron room. It was only 3 or 4 miles or something from Nicosia, give it 4 miles. And B Company, some of the carriers and support arms, probably mortars, and that went to a place called Wayne House. I visited that later on, but it was just like a quite big villa type, you know, and it was away, the road left Nicosia and went away, it was way over that side somewhere, but they were down like a mobile reserve, you know. And also established, they were able to train where the other rifle companies couldn't at that time. And they made a bit of a training area. And but we went up the aerodrome, and all there was one concrete runway, practically not as far as the eye could see, but by God, it was long. There was absolutely nothing else. There wasn't a building there. And there was a few hurricanes there, and the RAF personnel were sleeping under canvas at that time, like. Started to get a few woods later on. And right at this end of the runway, the nearest to Nicosia, there was a bloody big, what I can best describe as a wadi, you know. Same layer. Everything else was level, sloped down there. But there was this thing for a giant axe that cleared it out. It was probably 300 yards long, quite deep, you know. So headquarter company was in there. Plenty of cover and plenty of this, that and the other, you know. Because the boys named it Shit Creek, because Italian planes at maximum height, you know, occasionally they come over just a drone, and nobody took any much notice. They did drop a few bombs and they did no damage. It wasn't far from the creek. It was just more good luck than good money, so they named it Shit Creek, you know. So we were digging in there and this, that and the other, and of course we still had a lot of miners, and the rifle companies, the three rifle companies that were on there, they were digging defensive positions, you know, like it was near solid rock, like, practically. But the Harry's Field Regiment, they were building pillboxes at vantage points, you know, one or two pillboxes. And they were able to supply them with windy picks, you know, pneumatic drills, explosives. So with a hell of a lot of miners being there, like, it wasn't a problem. They shot these positions out in no time at all. But boy, it was very hot, like, and we used to work a few hours in the morning, and afternoon was a rest period, then maybe do a short period, an hour or two, after what we'd call tea time, you know. And it wasn't long of getting in, like, and this, that and the other. But there's plenty of water, mine, I will say that. And there's a poor old Cypriot used to come up, we had a donkey and a little cart, and he was loaded with baskets of grapes, you know, big black juicy grapes. And for a few coppers, you know, he'd fill your stale helmet, you know. So everybody had the shits for the fortnight, and he got used to them, you know. Great. Right, poor fella, these hurricanes were, occasionally one would take off, you know, a patrol, I suppose. He come in this day, down the runway, and his poor old ship, he was crossing the runway. Smashed the cart up, killed the donkey, killed him, and the plane wasn't hurt. To all intents and purposes, nothing wrong with the plane. How that happened, I don't know. Of course, they were delighted the plane, wasn't it? Like, I mean, the fowls would be, I suppose, with the four-olds. Waggy got he got his chips.
Did your day start with stand two? Did you do a stand two every day?
Well, stand two was on the morning and such as that. Like, well, you get there all the time, practically wherever you're at, you know. And it wasn't like when you're in the desert, law, and your lines here and there's there, right, you've got to be alert all the time. It wasn't as hard as that, like. So getting up and get something to eat and get to work, like, and such as that. Well, in the Wadi, we had this Major McLaren, second in command. He'd had something to do with the coal board, you know, and he knew mining, I think. So he was down overseeing. We had a sergeant that had been in the stretcher bearers. He'd been Danny Ayton, he'd been a deputy down the pit, so he was a master shot fighter. And anyway, they shot a command post straight out the side. It was probably as high as this, you know, and the tunnel didn't like. So when it finished, mine was out of position. If we'd had to defend it, like, would have took some, you know, shifting out of there. Right round about, the blokes was digging little bits of this and bits of that, you know. But actually, the airfield itself and the runway, that was, if the German had decided to airdrop there.
So your role was to defend the airfield?
Well, there, particularly at that time, to fortify the airfield, and if there was an airdrop, to accommodate them, like. I think if you'd have got accommodated, like, then, you know, they would hopefully arrive, you know. But anyway, they got organised, and as I say, it was very hot, and most of the people were working hard, you see. But except for Wayne House, where a big company was, you weren't doing any training at that moment of time till 2 or 3 weeks later when they saw, like, the work was being progressed. But they started a rest camp up in the Trudos Mountains, so you could go, if you were lucky, you went a few at a time, you know. And it was just a series of old dilapidated cottages and that, and it was outside a little village called Lefka. But I got a few days up there, and it was nice. Right up, you know, the air was pure, and there was an old disused copper mine somewhere on the top. It wasn't working, and it being an American owned, like, but you were 40 miles from Turkey, and you were looking down on Turkey. You could see Turkey in the distance, and most of the days were clear, you know. And it wasn't bad at that. It was a nice break. And in between times, if there was a bus, it was driven by an old ship. He wasn't an old ship. He said, oh, my God. Cyprus's answer to Stirling Moss. Went to a lovely little village, Kyrene. You've probably heard of it. I don't know if you've been there. It is a beautiful little spot. Even then, you know, there's no hotels and how good. There was big sun-baked waterfront, you know. These little cafes. And there was mostly Turks there then, you know. When the sheer austerity, like, would you get in these, sit in these little cafes, you know, and have a drink of wine and all that. But the Turks were quite friendly. And you could get a day there, a bus out at the time. A bit lie about the swimming was out of this world, you know. There was the sand outside, there were several miles of sand. It wasn't a wide beach, but it was a lovely beach, you know. It was as white as flour, you know. And right of the harbour, jutting out to sea, there was a pretty old building there, what it was supposed to be. It wasn't big enough to be a castle, you know what I mean? It's sat near there. But there had the internees in there, mostly Italians that lived there, you know. And most of them appeared to be female and all, you know, other than that, there was no problem there, like. But it was the last place you would put internees if they were escaped miners. Because, Christ, Turkey's only there, let's be right, like, and you could be in the sea and make yourself a bit of a raft. But and where we were allowed to swim, from this side, as far as you like this way, but they put a strand of barbed wire. Where'd they get this strand of barbed wire from, you know? Because these lass and that were swimming and all, but I had no problems there. They just ignored you and this, that, and the other. But wherever we went, I liked a bit roam around, find out what's going on. And about the second time we were there, I said, hey, let's have a look. Little dry walls and winding lanes, you know. Pomegranates growing over the wall and all this, and grapes is great. We wandered around, and away behind Kyrenia, there was a mountain slope. It was majestic place. The mountains went right away up there, you know, where we'd come through, like. And right on top, well, there was a castle there. And I've read about the castle. We never got a chance to look at it, like, but it stuck right up there, like, it looked great. But wandering around this day, who should we find? Two dear old English ladies. I mean, we say they were old, they were probably in the 50s, you know, they were old to us. And they retired there with a bungalow. And come in, you know, tea and buns and all that, like. So the few times I went up there, we never told anybody else, being down right different, no about to spoil the job, like. They've seen, tell your friends. No mind about the friends. And
the Cypriot population itself, how did you get on with those? You've mentioned the driver of your little cart and so, but the main population, did you meet them very often?
The Cypriots?
The Cypriots.
I wouldn't say they were standoffish. I think they were the little communities inside, little villages, you know. And weighing it up in my own mind, there was loggerheads, the Turks and the Greeks were Cypriots with loggerheads for so long. And such a distrust existed between anybody. If you don't belong to our village, we're not going to trust you, say. But they didn't interfere with your mind. But it was very hard to make friends with them. And for 2 or 3 days, we went down. What the hell did we go down for? Halfway between the aerodrome and Nicosia, there was some dry, like riverbeds there, you know. Went down filling trucks with pebbles and that for the engineers when they were helping them, so they were making pillboxes, you know, the concrete. There's a little village just along there, and say the Cypriots walking along, some of them are lovely looking girls and all that. You give them whistle or chat, they just ignored you, they just smiled and kept going, like, you know. But I didn't know anybody else. I don't think they were anti-British, if that's the word. I think they're anti-everybody. They just want to be left in peace, you say. Of course, in Nicosia itself, I mean, more cosmopolitan, like, there was all the Cypriot wide boys, put it that way, like, they're nearly as wide as us, you know. Quite a place, Nicosia. Dirty, stinking eye, heaven, one thing or another. But that about 3 or 4 places they're called cabarets, just to get the boys and get the money, you know, these cheap wines and all that. One was a Kit Kat. It was about as big as New Durham Club with no walls inside, you know. Just a barn effort, my God. Used to get packed, and right at the bottom was a big wooden bar. And the Cypriots was waiting on there, and this, and, you know, and we had a few Australians. I think it was an armoured car, you know, if I was told correctly. Great blokes, you could get on with them, you know. They were just as high spirit as our lot. And there was a few of us there. And there is the right mixture up. And right now, this particular night, full, you know, everything that. They're a 3-piece band. It's quite a band. And they were in a little balcony up there, and he used to get up on the ladder, and he used to take the ladder away so nobody would get up. Oh, dear me. And anyway, this night, the Cypriot bird, well, she's a big lass and all, is going down on her mind. She stuck like, you know, she started down the middle down there, they're all shouting to clean the floor. She started doing forward rolls right down the hall, you know. The thing was, she had no pants on. Well, that set the place away, you know. Oh, it was just like a prairie fire. There was fist fights going all over, the bar got pushed over, one thing and another. They closed it for a couple of days, that was happening again. But the Sherwood Foresters were having to do the military police job, you know. And big, tall, strapping lads, well, they couldn't put that knee chance, you know what I mean? They were joining in and out to finish. And then down that Ledra Street, is it? That's the main street, little narrow, dirty. Little place, a dirty little place then. It was known later as the Murder Mile when the troubles were on, because you'll have seen it, Murder Mile. Well, each place had its own name. Went in on the right side, there was a place stood back. I don't know how you call it, a pub or what, but it was named Dirty Dick's, because if anybody wanted a venereal disease, you could get it there, that sort of thing, you know. And then you had a pretty ice cream shop, which wasn't worth going in. And then at the bottom end, we had Uncle Joe's, big fat Cypriot. I don't know why most of them are fat, like, but black tash on, shiny white teeth, friendly with the world, you know. And you could get fried egg and raw tomato. You know what I mean? There wasn't much else to pick from, but just to drop in there. The bloody cockroaches crawling up the wall about 2.5 inches long, you know. But we accepted that after a while. But except for fist fights and this, that, you know, show your high spirits, you know. The one kicking wind is out and like you do now or one thing, you know. The slippery is kept off the streets at night, like, you know. Of course, there's somebody in every day, 7 days a week. We got 24 hours a week off, staggered, like, you know. 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock next morning. You had to be on prayer at 8 o'clock next morning. And if you didn't finish up in the nick, like, where you put your report the next morning, you know. But, it was just a way of life, like, and they were pretty hard then, you know. See? Then they started, they're getting well on with the digging, like, so they start sending a platoon or so at a time from each company down to this warehouse to get for a bit of training, field firing and all that, like. They'd laid it on. Well, they went, there's one instant, was it? C Company, it was my company later on. C Company was down. And it was a grenade exploded premisely. How that would have done that, I don't know, even though it was a court of inquiry about. There was a young officer got killed, there was another one got wounded. There was a private got killed, and Jody Self got wounded there. But we never saw him again until Sicily were waiting to come home. Well, he had been wounded, took prison then, but Jody rejoined them just before they came home from Sicily. And then he got the DCM in Holland. Did you know George Self? Have you heard of him? Oh, I haven't heard of him. So he died not long ago. He died where he developed cancer.
What was the food like you were getting?
The what?
Food.
Well, it wasn't very good on Cyprus. No. The point is, it's a potato-grown island now, but they didn't grow them then. And there was a limit to what they could import, you know. They couldn't even export their own fruit and the wines and that, you see. And I think it was just the bare necessities coming in. But I've never eaten rice since. Rice is easy to import, you know what I mean? You get a bag of rice and all this. We've got rice everywhere. We've got rice for everything. Fried, boiled, stewed, jumped on, grilled, oh dear me. Rice in place of potatoes, you know. No sugar, of course. No bloody milk, obviously. Rice on its own isn't very appetizing. Keeps body and soul together. But you got the basic rations, you know. This, that, and the other. You could get bread being on Cyprus, like, but there was a limit on what you got. But everybody was ringing us down to battle rations, the bare minimum, you see.
The climate didn't affect your health. You were healthy?
Oh, great. When they're running around and working on the airport and all that, everybody straight, they talk about skin cancer and such as that. They were brown as berries, you know, they're really, you know. And I mean, say you're about 11 to 12 stone and you're not a bad build. If you get sunburned, you look twice as big, don't you? It's like a Negro's, you know, isn't it? You know. And they were really specimens of manhood. It was great to see everybody running around. And anyway, Cyprus, I don't know if there's more exciting happened, but the work was nearly finished anyway, and I think we'd only been there 3 months, was it, take it up. We're all marching orders again, Palestine. That's all they tell you, going to Palestine. And 5th Indian Division, there's two of their brigades taking over. They moved in as we moved out, like. And we entrained down to Famagusta, because Famagusta was used as it's not used as a port now, I think. It's the Turks had it. But we got there late afternoon. Next morning, at daylight, we're going to be straight out with a destroyer.
This would be about November, 3 months.
Yes, I think it was. I think it was the first week in November, if I remember. Really early part of November. Although you sort of didn't write the dates down. But I remember the whole battalion were just sleeping, kit and all, sleeping under the, just outside Famagusta, not far back from the beach, right among the palm trees, you know, right the way back. They're just in companies and platoons right along. And where we were, like, it was just the lads just lying around smoking all night. It was a funny thing. There was as a lad got up to sing, and the Dawson blew the mouth organ. You know, I was blocking it. He accompanied him. Do you know, it wasn't something like the ride home of all, but it was something that stuck in your memory, and I'll tell you why. He'd been a singer, we got them from Old Walk, so he'd been a dance band singer pre-war, you know the way the dance bars are, and a crooner come with that like. And he was singing Begin to Begin, aye. And it stuck in my memory that, now I was looking at this, all these blokes, like, we're all fit as fire. I was wondering how many would get back to England, you know, and such as that, eventually, like. Because we knew the future wasn't very rosy, like we're going to get out of brass tacks. But anyway, it was long after the war, just a few years back. He's still alive, a lad called Jackie Morley. He's in the Pioneer Platoon. No, he's in the Signal Platoon. And I was talking to him, he's reminiscing a few years about the war. He says, I'll always remember, he says, before we're waiting to come off Cyprus, you saw that. I said, what are you going to say? He says, Begin and Begin. I says, aye. And it stuck with him and all, like, you know, how many more do I know? But there's nothing like, except unless you were there, like. But it's something registered, little things register in your mind.
Were you getting letters from home on Cyprus? The post was coming in.
Aye, but very, very sparse. There wasn't a regular mail, anything like that. And I'll go as far as to say you didn't worry about it. You know, yeah. Days went on, there was always something, it was this, that and the other. And especially later on, in the desert, letters were very few and far between. They were there somewhere, but there's so many more important things to send out, I suppose. But you did get them, but not one a week and all that, like. And you didn't write, you come to a time where you didn't write home very often yourself. I mean, what could you tell them, like? The letters were censored. He couldn't say why he had a skirmish last night and lost three men and knocked six of them off out like that. That sort of thing he couldn't say. But anyway, we hunted his try next morning. No alarms, no bangs. Into Haifa. Offloaded there. And the 5th Indian Division, we'd left our transport on Cyprus and we had to take theirs over. What a bloody state it was in. Wasn't their fault, like. They'd been in the Western Desert, had been all over, you know. We moved a few miles up towards, I think it would be Northern Cyprus, and there was a tented camp there. And we were there a few days, mine. The fitters were having to really go through the wagons, you know. And then they told us, we thought, well, we're going into the desert, like, we'll have a fair go at them. Northern Iraq. They thought he was coming through the Caucasus, you know. So they'll have to stop and getting into the Middle East. I said, well, this is good.
Did you know where this was, how far it was from Palestine?
We didn't really know, and it was a long way. We didn't worry, you know, it's that, how the hell are we going to get there? But anyway, where the food wasn't bad while we're in Palestine there, you get a lot of fruit, you know, you get an unlimited supply of fruit, because they couldn't export the fruit, you know. You get bloody Jaffas as big as that, really. I've never seen them in this country. And we used to do more training patrols and all that. Right through the miles and miles of the olive groves, you know, where you could help yourself, you know, tangerines, there's a lot. And not far from the camp, I mean, there's no tide in the Mediterranean, but there's a wash, like. In this particular place, it was marvellous. It was a pretty big basin, it sloped up like that. And it'll still be going, it must have, since the world began, it must have been, the tide goes out from every year, a quarter of a mile. And it's not a tide, it's a wash. And then it starts to creep up, and it builds up, it's as high as this. And then wash it straight up that beach, right the same spot, and back again. I used to have some fun when you could get down there. But it was going out, you run like hell to try and catch it. You couldn't, you know. And then when it started to come back, the rut set in, you run for your life. Like, even the non-swimmers were having to go, as long as that would swim like. But when it caught you, all you had to do was hold your breath. And it took you right away up. What a sensation. And it dropped you gently on this beach. Aye.
And did you come into contact with any Palestinians for the time you were there?
Totally unfriendly, the Arab type, aye. And the kids were very bloody cheeky, you know, this, that and the other. On the gimmick log all the time. Bookshares, you know, they wanted cigarettes, wanted this, wanted that, wanted the other, say. But there wasn't so many around that camp, mine, around that way, but there was a few Jewish, it's what they call them, kibbutz, is it? Aye. So I think it was, we were leaving next morning, Forest Leaf. We're going to leave the next day. So I look at the map. Why, it was blacked out at night, you know. There's one little strip road up there. There's a little village marked on the map, so six of us went down there. You weren't supposed to, but off we went. Rifles and all this, that, and the other. Still, we had to take them with you, that was honest. And you weren't supposed to be out the camp. Found this village all right, went in. It was... I would have liked to see it in daylight, like it seemed, you know, it was quite big. It was all wooden huts, you know, like cabins, that sort of thing. So we shifted out, we found a bit of a glimmer of a light and went and knocked at this door. The door opened and we were sitting down for supper. And it was spotless inside, you know. And he either looked at us, I don't know what was going off in their minds, whether they thought it was really the Germans had arrived or what, you know. Don't even know if they'd come from Germany, you know, a lot of them had at that time. What we want to know, where we're going to drink, see, simple as that. And there was four kids there, sitting round the table, and the old man was at the, well, he wasn't an old man, the father at the top, he had his Jewish skull cap thing on, you know, and the woman was sitting there.